What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy Morgan. Russ, I hope you have chock full of ideas about your bracket because I'm coming for you this year.
He shoots, he scores.
Actually, as you well know, I have no clue about my bracket.
Look, buddy, just pick the mascot that you like who seems to be the most fierce. And you got it.
No, I do not go by the mascot. I go by the numbers, right? You pick those guys that have the number one next to them. You just move those down to the final four, and you're golden, right?
Maybe so. I would say this. Give you a little tip. Okay, insider knowledge here, Joe. You ready?
Yeah.
Take the 5 seed out of the West. Deep.
Ah, your Auburn Deep. Tigers, huh?
I'm telling you, man, I'm feeling good about them this year. It's their year.
Hey, I'll give it to them. The 5 minutes of basketball that I've watched in the last several years, last week, they looked good.
Well, I don't know how good they are going to be, but we won the SEC tournament, so I'm happy. I got my Auburn gear on today. You, though, want to listen to experts, and I am not an expert in picking brackets. Typically, I finish behind at least a 6-year-old or younger in our family who picks brackets, you know, they do pick by the mascot. And that's the reason I tend to fail because I don't pick the mascots that are the most fierce. But today's interview is going to be pretty cool because we're listening to an expert on something that is near dear to our heart, which is real estate investing, but it's coming from a really unique source.
Right. Aaron Chapman is joining us today as a mortgage lender who is an expert in helping investors to position themselves to buy more investment properties.
Well, tell me about this, though, Joey, because you did mortgages for 11 years. So I would say you did a ton of mortgages. I would have considered you a mortgage expert. I mean, in your heyday, you were doing, what, 25, 30 mortgages a month?
That's right. And so for this guy to do over 700 loans last year, and they're all investment property loans, let me just clarify this for you. Doing a loan for someone that's buying their own primary residence, cakewalk compared to doing investment property loans. And he's doing the hardest loans and he's doing the most of them. So I definitely think we need to give credence to this guy.
Now tell me, just because I don't know this, why is an investment property loan more difficult than buying up just a house and getting a loan for my primary mortgage?
Well, because you have to qualify for that new mortgage payment even without the cash flow.
So they don't even take into consideration that you're going to be positive, hopefully, in this.
Well, they have to have proven income stream from it. So if you're, let's say, a newer investor into that property, you don't have any income stream to show that it's coming. So you have to qualify on your own. And there's more documentation and things like this that can go wrong. Trust me, it's a tough gig. And he's taking it on full steam.
Well, it's kind of interesting, though, because most of the time when someone gets a mortgage, you really just call the person up, say, I want the best rate. And what we heard Aaron say on our podcast was, it's not about the rate.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a true expert. He's sharing insights with his clients that I think everybody that is trying to get into investing in real estate or they're already investing in real estate could benefit from. How you think going from that employee mindset to becoming an investor, That's not a small step.
Well, also, he kicks you in the teeth a little bit whenever he says, hey, look, when a problem arises, because in sometimes in real estate, you've been hit, you've been knocked down before, and some people just want to get up and just quit, be like, I don't want to deal with it. He has an interesting take on when you get knocked down, what you should do. I think you're going to like it. Let's jump into the interview with Aaron Chapman.
Have you ever had the thought, I really am not saving enough for the future? And at the same time, you're sitting down to write an enormous check to the IRS every single year for $100,000, $250,000, $500,000 in taxes? Guess what? We just found the money that you should be saving, and it's been under your nose the entire time. Go to freetaxwebinar.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and learn how the wealthy are paying less in taxes. You can implement these strategies so that the next check you write will be to your financial future and not to the IRS. Welcome into the show, Aaron Chapman. Man, we are so pumped to have you on the show today.
As am I, man. It's been a long time coming, and I know we missed a couple opportunities before because schedules being what they are and my inability to run a calendar effectively. I'm just glad we're here.
Well, we're not. I wish we were right there with you in your cabin in Missouri. That place looks amazing.
Isn't it awesome? To me, I've been here for the last 5 days. I work longer hours here than I do anywhere else, and it seems like the time just blew by. I absolutely love the setting. I feel like I can take on any problem when I'm sitting here because my mind just has the ability to think and concentrate better.
I mean, it looks like something out of Little House on the Prairie, you know, just for those that cannot see the picture I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, Little House on the Prairie, but with balls.
I was about to say, Aaron, Joey has 5 girls, so
yeah. Yeah, come on. Those are the only analogies that I have, you know? I
mean, yeah, he's exactly. Sees everything through pink lens.
It should be like Daniel Boone and crap. You know, people that go on taking down bears with knives, things like that. No, you want to go to Laura Ingalls and running around in a bonnet.
Yeah, this thing is like Alaskan.
When we're done here, I'm going to walk outside and pick some flowers.
That's right, yeah. This is more like Alaskan Extreme or something.
Yeah.
See, that I can do right there. I got a picture that I can send you guys of me bear hunting this last June in Alaska.
Nice.
Which a rug is going in here from that, just so you know. It's nice. I can't wait.
Well, your backstory is really, really interesting. And if we go back, take you back till 2008, you kind of had a life event that kind of sparked the way you see life. Share a little bit about what happened in August of 2008 with us.
So August 2008, of course, 8 is my lucky number and always has been since I was a kid. And I was rolling up on 8/8/08. And at that time, I was doing the lending thing during the day. And then at night, I was working with some friends who had asked me to come in and help them convert an English double-decker bus, it was an old Bristol bus, into a mobile strip club, basically. And so I was working... I was sleeping 4 hours a night. I go into the shop and I work all night working on the upper deck on this thing, creating a DJ booth and welding in all the spots for the poles and all kinds of things. And then I go to go home and, you know, shower and get ready and go to the work all day. So I did that for about a month. And then I needed to clear my head because the market was getting all crazy at that time. I was still doing very well. I had a great base of business. But August 8th rolled around. I was going to jump on the new bike I had just ordered from Harley. It was a 2008 Crossbones. Did not come in. And so they gave me a fleet bike, and I was heading down the road. 15 minutes into my ride, a guy in a black Ford truck flips on his blinker and starts coming into me. Mm-hmm. I looked over my right shoulder, saw that nobody was there. I hit the throttle, leaned into it, and just then somebody was trying to pass me. I flipped her front bumper and went flipping. I don't recall much, but late that night, it's like midnight, waking up in a room, seeing the fluorescent light above me, and trying to figure out where I was at, and asking my wife if she knew, you know, where am I, what happened. So I saw her sitting next to me, and she had kind of an exasperated response, like, this is my 50th time of asking that question, which I guess it really was.
Wow.
But it finally started to stick. And then I come to find out that I was going to be wheelchair bound for a while. Had broken a lot of bones, collapsed lung, major concussion, a lot of memory loss. I'd actually retrained my brain after that to remember things. I had to walk around with a notepad. And some people that had a great relationship in the business, they were very, very patient with me. My mom was one of them. She was a realtor for many years. And then another great realtor over at Coldwell Banker there in Phoenix, named Carolyn, also, they would call me up with a client referral, tell me the information, then call me right back, say, hey, did you write that down? I'm like, write what down? So we just had that call. Get your pad and write this down. Wow. And I had to train my brain to remember again. And I learned a lot from that. I've been asked many times what lessons were garnered from that. And I realized that you learn a lot about you as an individual. You know, can you take a beating and move forward? Because we're all, just forgive the language here, but you're either walking into a shitstorm, weathering a shitstorm, or coming out of a shitstorm. That's life. And how you respond to that is going to dictate what happens to you. And I really called that a divine gift of an accelerated education. Mm. And I was able to learn a lot from that beating as to how I'm supposed to move forward in life. And I use that same lesson when I'm talking with real estate investors, because many of them took a beating during that crash. I was lucky. You know, I know people don't see it that way, but I was lucky. Not only did I have to experience the crash, the millions of dollars of loss that I took on. And when creditors were calling me, you know, I'm sitting in a wheelchair when I'm taking that call. And I went into the hospital at 195 pounds, 7% body fat. I was a marathoner, I was a climber, I was doing all kinds of stuff. And I left wheeled out of there at 154 pounds. I was a bone bag when I left that hospital. Man. And when creditors would call and would start antagonizing me, if we will, I would just fax them my first week's bill, which was $1.7 million. And they backed off real quick. And I got to keep my house and my cars, and I lost other homes, my investment properties. I lost; they got foreclosed on. But I was able to recover quickly because of what happened to me. Where others, it drug on for a long time, unfortunately. So what I get to convey to those investors who took that beating, who say now, I may not go into real estate now because of that. Like, why not? You learned a valuable lesson. You got some extremely great education out of that. Why not apply that education to move forward and then just adapt to the environment? If you don't do that, then you basically wasted all the education you've got. You've thrown it away. You're a person with a master's degree in ass whooping, but you're actually going to go, you're going to go be a greeter at Walmart because everything else is too damn scary.
Yeah, right. It's what we do after getting that whooping that it really makes the difference, right? It's the information that we have. I mean, ideally we'd love to borrow it from someone else and not pay retail for it. But when you have it, now you know what to do.
Precisely. What many people do, what you'll see humans do, when they take a beating, they usually will lay there and lick their wounds. And life is passing them at that same time, right? Mm-hmm. But if you get that beating and you jump up and start running again, you'll find that many times that kick that caught you, I tell people a lot of times, I'm just trying to outrun that big foot, trying to kick my ass every day, that it eventually catches you. But you'll find that it propels you. And if you keep running, you'll find that literally you actually are a little bit ahead of life. You just don't stop. It's the person who lays down and licks their wounds and let life pass them that find that they have a lot of work to even just catch up to where they should have been. So don't give up. Don't stop. And I tell everyone, you know, I'm not even thinking about retirement. When I come to the grave, I'm coming in hot.
Well, Aaron, this is so good what you're sharing with. It's a mindset, right? That there's a huge difference between where you were beforehand and where you are now. And I feel like a lot of our the people that we're talking to on an everyday basis, they are trying to get from one point in life to another. We can kind of use the framework of Robert Kiyosaki. He's got the quadrant, right? The employee, the self-employed, the business owner, and then the investor, the cash flow quadrant. And it takes a huge difference. There's a huge mental leap that goes from an employee to an investor. And from talking to you ahead of time, you've told me some things that you've shared with investors as they've engaged you for the lending process to buy rental properties or whatever. What are the things that you see people coming in with, either gaps in that or that you have been able to share with investors to get past that point mentally?
Well, one of the things that attracts a lot of people to the real estate investment world, they refer to it as a passive investment. I try to help them to realize it's not as passive as they think that it really is. that you really have a more of an active role than you believe. And the two main goals of anybody stepping into that, it's actually more than one than two main goals, but it's really the main thing they need to do initially is get the mindset right. They need to understand that they're no longer a consumer spending money and going into debt for this. They are now a business owner. They're not just an investor. They're the CEO of a real estate investment firm. And when they're going and taking over a property that they're going to rent out, they're not spending any money. They're just moving money from a liquid account now to a non-liquid asset. And then they're not going into debt. I know Kiyosaki likes to say good debt and bad debt. I'm going to disagree with him on the debt part. I understand what he's saying, and I agree with his philosophy, but debt needs to completely go off of the table because it's not debt. That is the biggest asset. Mm. So when they wrap their mind around the fact that they just now took over a business in the form of either a single family or a multifamily property, and they took on a business partner in the form of financing, they put up 20% of the capital for this business, potentially, you know, with a single family. And then they've got a partner who I help arrange that as the lender, you know, whether it be a regular conventional loan, you know, low rates, 30-year fixed. They brought on a partner to do 80% of the business acquisition, yet they're going to take a set amount of return for the rest of for 30 full years. That is a massive thing to wrap their head around. When they look at this, they think, well, I'm going to debt for 30 years. No, you're not. If you are thinking correctly as the CEO of this business, you as the CEO is one, picking the right team to work with. You'll get the right people that are going to be managing that. Well, one, locating the property, acquiring it, rehabbing it, managing it, and maintaining it. That is a necessity. Then you need to have somebody on the financial perspective and some people that will help you to help build up that piece of it, myself included, and you guys with the insurance piece. Then you've got all the members of the board table. And many successful CEOs say that the reason they're successful because they're the dumbest person at the board table. You know, and if you've got the right people, you chose correctly there, then you're destined to do well, especially if you pick people that have a lot of experience that you do not have. You know, I say good judgment comes from experience and experience comes from bad judgment. Why exercise bad judgment to learn everything when we can just take what we have and apply that and let them learn from other people that we have helped? I've done 707 loans last year for real estate investors. The year before that was 676. I've seen a lot of judgment at work. Let me give you at least the information you need to make a right decision. Now, beyond that, when we're talking about the 80% loan and the 20% down, if you chose properly the right people and the right property, you know, the property that's going to maintain itself because it's going to want to be rented all the time, that means somebody else is paying off that 80%. When you divide that 80% over 30 years, let's say it's a $100,000 purchase, $20,000 down, $80,000 loan, divide $80,000 over 30 years, that is equal to an average of $2,666.66 per year that somebody else is paying to live in that home. And you divide that into the 20% that they invested. They didn't spend it. They moved it that they put over there. Their 20 grand is growing by 13.33% of the original 20,000 every year. Huh. Now, we also understand that we're living in an environment of inflation. The government says it's 2.6% maybe. Well, look up something called shadowstats.com. You and I may have, actually, somebody else had told me about it, and you may know about that website. They say it's over 5%.
Yeah.
There, because it goes backwards to the 1980s and puts all the information in there. In fact, it was John Abernathy, who's a mutual friend of both of ours.
Yes.
He's the one who shared that with me. John is absolutely awesome. I'm going to be working with him and his students soon to create some other in-depth stuff we can talk about on a future podcast. But so John shared that with me, and you see it's 5 to 7% is what the actual rate of inflation is. So what that says is you can raise the rent on the property at least 3% per year. Right now, the national average is 3.6. The coastal apartments are 4.7, and people are signing renewals. So if you're raising it 3% per year, you're getting a compound of 3% growth on the rent. But we know with inflation, the dollar is losing value every year. So if it's losing 5% per year at a compounded rate, that means the dollar that's being accepted, even though they signed a contract to accept the exact same dollar amount every year for 30 years, it's worth less and less and less every year. So what I'm going to do with the students over at Kennesaw State is to figure out what that actually equates to after about 10, 15, 20 years. My mind's telling me about 12 to 15 years, you're actually paying zero. on that after the dollar is devalued that quickly at that rate. So the investor gets the spread there. What they're raising the rents and what they're paying in a devalued dollar, they get to keep that spread. That's before any sort of tax benefits,
right?
Any cash flow, and any appreciation. So we're seeing thousands of percent return possibility here.
No, that's spot on. We actually just did a podcast that kind of broke out a little bit about that as it relates to income and a property, how it compares the equity and what's happening with the payment and inflation. All of that's awesome. You said something as I was listening to you. You said leveraging advice from trusted team members, people that you need to have at that seat around the table,
the boardroom.
I'm an investor. I want to leverage you. What is the one thing that you bring to the table that helps me the most?
Well, it's experience. You know, the average person in my industry, they do between 3 and 4 transactions per month. And that's statistics derived from 2017. They're still coming out with the 2018 statistics. And I know that volume dropped from 17 to 18 with the rate increase. That has been made known. Well, if the average person is doing 4 to 5 transactions or 3 to 4 transactions per month in my industry, that means that they have a knowledge base to pull from of 36 to 48 transactions per year. And we know that the majority of the people in the lending industry focus on people buying homes to live in, right? Not people buying homes to invest in. So their philosophy and their perspective can be completely different. Well, what I shared earlier is I did 707 transactions last year for real estate investors. The year before that was 676. The year before that was 483 and on back, right? Yeah. I've been doing this since 1997. Started focusing on real estate investors since 2003. The main thing that I would bring to the table is when a real estate investor has a decision to make about their business, a question that comes up that they don't understand, and they pose that to me, I'm going to come back to them with, I had another client that experienced the exact same thing. This was the decision they made, and this was the outcome. I'm not going to hit them with theory. I'm not going to hit them with speculation. I'm going to give them actual practical data to draw from and think through as if they did that same decision themselves. Many times I've had a lot of clients come to me and say, hey, my attorney said I should do this, or my CPA said I should do this, and this is how I'm going to go about it. And I'll have to back them up and say, listen, I appreciate how they said that and why they said that, but they don't understand how that affects your financing. And if you go about it that way, your financing will not be able to go through. We're going to have to go down a commercial route, which is going to be higher rates, lower loan to values, cash flows is going to be thrown off. You're not going to be able to reach the goal that you're looking to attain. But if you go this route, which I've seen dozens of investors do, you can accomplish what they're telling you to do, plus get the conventional financing at the same time and have that long-term 30-year fixed note.
All right. So take me in that scenario that you were just saying. If I'm sitting here listening to that, I want to know, like, okay, if I'm getting ready to do this, what's that mistake that I need to avoid? What is that thing that my CPA or attorney might be telling me to do that may make sense on the surface, but when I get underneath it, there's some flaws. What does that look like? Give me a scenario.
Well, often it's going to be attacking the write-offs right away, okay. Right? You want to be able to write everything off to be able to pay less taxes at the end of that year, right? Okay. So there's a lot of times you'll have individuals that will, in their first year of investing, they'll just attack everything they possibly can and stack on their Schedule E and try and limit the tax liability. And by doing so, they end up also shrinking their verifiable income or their taxable income, which is really the goal. But when they ultimately do that, they end up changing their qualifying capability at that point. Now the income they'd used to qualify for the financing has diminished to the extent now they don't qualify anymore.
So when
I've seen that happen quite often.
Yeah, so when they come back to the table to try to get more properties, it's like, wait a second, you really are not a viable borrower because you're not showing enough income to make this thing work.
Yeah, you just put yourself in a negative position. You now have such a minimal income that according to your tax returns, you can't even maintain your own primary residence, much less your other expenses, your cars and your student loans and other things. And now you want to buy other investments? You're making it look like you're losing money every year, which I understand the point behind that, but it's actually crippling you. Now, if they would go the other route and be a little bit more conservative with that and not try and write everything off they can possibly think of. Then they get to a point where eventually they'll own enough real estate that they can depreciate so much that they're not going to pay taxes almost at all, like Robert Kiyosaki talks about, because of the depreciation capability. And they're still going to be able to qualify with the income because they're not eroding their income. They're using a paper loss based on depreciation.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's so good. I mean, you're pointing out things that people need to know on the front end of getting into these transactions. Aaron, my background, as you know, is in mortgage. And the fact that you have done so many in investment properties, that was one of those things that I kind of, you know, did not want to tackle on an everyday basis. Investor loans are way harder than owner-occupied loans. And so for you to have that kind of experience, you're right. You're bringing a ton to the table and that expertise. Shine the light on like your best clients. What other team members do you see them having in place in order to be successful as a real estate investor to build their portfolio?
The most successful folks that I've worked with are the ones that kind of walk into it with eyes open and looking at many angles. I've seen a lot of folks say, well, I've been listening to podcasts. I've been seeing all these really cool things and people making money in real estate. They want to dive in all the way into the deep end, right? And they'll do whatever they got to do to get there. I was talking with a client this last week. He had a goal of so many properties this year or between last year and this year. And he went to the extent of leveraging himself personally so much to be able to buy these properties that now he's forced himself in a situation where he literally has no extra. And he really went at a kind of a detrimental direction the prompting of somebody else just trying to sell property. So what I try and encourage many to do is take a step back. Let's look at this. Do one at a time. Don't go so crazy by 3, 4, 5. I've done as many as 10 loans for one guy closing in 3 states all on the same day. It was tough. That's not an easy thing. Yeah, every day for that 40 days, I was going home, climbing in bed with my shotgun and sleeping with the muzzle in my mouth. It was pure insanity, but we got it done. I've got a team of 12, actually it's 15 now, that they're all very, very good. And my girls, they go at this thing like lionesses on coke. They will make sure that these deals get done and they take it personally if it doesn't.
Yeah.
So that individual that I'm literally dancing around here, it's going to look at things from a perspective, okay, what is going to set me up for the future? Not as what's going to get me in a house right now. We talk about utilizing the life insurance. If you're sitting on $100,000 and say, I want to go pay cash for a house that's going to give me my best cash flow. Like, well, let's take a step back here. Let's talk about instead of buying one, let's buy 4. And then what is that cash flow going to be? The cash flow is going to be even more. And on top of that, you've got 4 properties being paid off by somebody else. Look at the total value there. Now, let's pause before you dump the money in and start going into contract. Have you looked at the cash flow life insurance? Have we considered that? He's like, well, what is that? Well, let me tell you about it. So I give him a little bit of rundown of what I have. Not selling insurance because I don't sell the stuff. But when I discovered it, to me, it was like the holy damn grail. Like, why is it I didn't dig this thing up out of the mountain of years ago and start putting it to work? So now I have that. And on top of that, I fell in love with it so much, I bought it for me, my wife, and each one of my children. Now, in a future date, we'll talk about how I have my children having to maintain the policies I created for them. Because if they don't, then they don't get to access the trust.
Right.
I've created a trust that they have to vote on all the things we do. And we'll get into all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I have a legacy.
Don't be doing a spoiler alert on me, Aaron. Come on.
Well, no, I'm playing the really cool parts of the next movie for the trailer. And then when everybody goes and watches the movie, they're going to find out it sucks.
Well, here's the thing is that when you dive in and you have the expertise you have, I think it lends you the credibility to speak into people's life. Right? Because a lot of times mortgage people tend to work from a perspective of order taker and they don't necessarily, as the borrower, as I'm coming to you as a mortgage as somebody who needs a mortgage, I don't necessarily know what I need. But yet I may think, Aaron's job is just to help me get this mortgage. And so I'm just telling what I want and move on. I find it very appealing that you step into that seat and say, hey, let me give insight here. Not just from, again, I want to just throw my 2 cents in because I love to hear myself talk, but I just did 700 mortgages last year and they were all in the investment arena. And what I'm seeing you potentially walk down is a nasty trail.
Oh, it's one of the most treacherous sumbitches you've ever stepped your foot on. Because, you know, like you said, order takers, they're the average mortgage person, they're about what's my rate, what's my cost. They're all competing with each other in a rate and cost environment. I didn't even get into that. In fact, they call me up and say, hey, I'm just curious what your rates and costs are, because that's what they've been told on right. how to differentiate. By the time we're done talking, I actually have to bring it up at the end. I say, didn't you want to talk about that? It's like, oh, yeah, what is it? We're no different than anybody else. We all get our money from the same place. There's just only maybe $200 or $300 variant between each lender. Not a big deal. But I want to challenge their mind. I want to take them away from that consumer mindset, yes. pull them out of that, and start getting them thinking for themselves. We have been directed by the media and by advertising for so long that we don't know what to think. Right. I want to pull them out of that and help them think. I want to shake them up a little bit and get them thinking about how to become a successful business owner, not a successful consumer of crap.
Yeah. All right. So I'm ready. I'm fired up. I'm listening to this podcast. I want to call you up. I'm ready to take action. What do you believe are some of those key steps that every investor needs to take in order to start building this real estate portfolio?
They need to go to AaronBChapman.com to start with.
Okay.
you go somewhere else, you're risking dealing with somebody who says, oh, I got great rates. Right. So which, God bless them. Everybody yeah. needs great rates. But and we want to be able to give them the same, but we also want to do something else. But start there is what I really want to say, because I'm gonna help the mindset get right. But also they really need to qualify themselves and know where they're sitting. When you look at your current expenses, when you have the housing expense, which is whether it be rent or whether it be the mortgage payment plus the taxes, insurance, your car payments, your credit card, student loans, anything you're paying debt-wise, not cell phone, not insurance, those are cost of living expenses. This is stuff you're paying back. Whoever right. you're paying back, is that less than 50% of your gross income? That's one where you start. Number two, have you been able to put aside money and save? Now, a lot of people say, well, there's got to be a way to get into these deals with no money. Well, yeah, that ship, I don't say it hasn't completely sailed, but you're still going to have to swim out to it a little ways. It's out in the harbor a little bit.
Right.
Everybody's trying to sell some sort of zero down option or get in with a handshake. It may be out there, but don't count on it. Because if it's there, there's 100 people in line in front of you, and there might be something hidden underneath that gold veneer that's there. Yeah. So if you have the capability to put aside some money, or you have money doing nothing, many people have it sitting in some sort of account doing nothing. You have it sitting in the bank, it's a huge risk. Right. You need to consider whether or not you're okay with taking it out of the bank and investing it into something where it's not so liquid. Putting it in the bank, I actually have to convince my wife of this too, is getting out of the bank, put it into our life insurance policies, putting it into protected over there in the ways that does, and put it into real estate, because in the bank, it's subject to inflation, which is one huge risk. Secondly, a subject to, if the banks fail, they can take your deposits and issue you stock, as I understand.
Yeah,
I could be wrong there, but that's where I believe that new capability is.
Yeah,
and then third, exactly. And then at third, it's at risk from us. I could take that money and easily turn it into a boat tomorrow. You know, I'm tempted to do stupid crap like that because we're all human.
Yeah.
So get yourself into a position where you believe that you're in a position that you can make that happen, and start getting your finances in order before you start looking to start jumping in investment properties. Because if your house is not in order, you're going to put yourself at risk by stretching yourself out.
Yeah.
Aaron, you've added a ton of value today. I don't want to miss something before we start landing the plane here. You mentioned about infinite banking, insurance, using your policies for all these type of things. And I don't want to miss the fact that we're kind of talking to the choir right here. We got our clients are listening and hearing this, but for those that may not be as clear, like what is so different about using this insurance policy to buy these rental properties, to invest in real estate, than just using cash? Like, what would be your opinion that you share with that new investors never heard about infinite banking or the possibility of using insurance? Why in the world would they do that over cash?
Well, the things that influenced me to do that over cash was, one, the three things that I just mentioned, you know, that you have it at risk with inflation, you have it at risk with banks and whether or not the banking system has some fragility going forward. And then, of course, me, myself, going out there and utilizing it in something not so benevolent, right? So those three things, I found I could take the same amount of money that I would invest into real estate, that block of funds created a place to park it in the life insurance, and it's still just as available because you can borrow against it. And then now I have a death benefit. I have something growing at a pace, albeit a moderate pace of what, 5%+ per year, but it's protected from creditors, protected from bankruptcy. It's really, it's not even an accessible asset to anybody but me, unless I want to go through the steps of accessing it through a loan of sorts. And so when you start understanding how it works and how protected those funds are, and even if you don't even choose to use it, it's still growing, right? Where when it's sitting in my bank account at 0.04% for a money market, as long as you have $100,000 or wherever the hell it is, it's losing a massive amount of money every year because of inflation. I park it over here, it's at least pacing inflation, so I'm not losing money.
Yeah, so Go ahead. No. So when you're talking about life insurance and using that as an asset from a mortgage perspective, how does the banks look at that? Like, how do they treat people who have lots of cash values in their accounts, or if they want to use those as the down payment? Like, what's the perspective that you're seeing from the bank?
Oh, I'd love the perspective of most of the banks. They sit there and scratch their head and have no idea what to use it for. They're like, is that an asset? They don't even know. I'm like, well, yeah, I dumped a bunch of money in there. It must be an asset, but they're not getting it.
Yeah.
A lot of my clients that call me up say, well, what can I do with this? Because the bank says it's not, you know, it's, I have to get a loan on it, so it counts as a loan. It's like, because your bank doesn't understand it, which is great for me, because the less they understand, the better business that I do, because we get it. We know what that is. We use it all the time. I have so many clients that have that it's like a regular account to us.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't affect us at all. The people we work with send us the necessary paperwork for the withdrawal of those funds, and we just rock and roll and close deals.
Yeah.
Sure, the first couple of times we had to get them on the line and help our folks understand it, but once they understood it, I think actually a couple of the people within my firm went ahead and got some themselves. So it's awesome. It makes a lot of sense to us, and I love the fact that it's such a steep entry point for this particular type of business. The real estate investor business is very hard. It's not easy. Doing these kind of loans is extremely difficult. And it's mostly from our side, not the borrower's side. The borrower side always knows it's going to be a crap pile of paperwork and some guy on the line begging for stuff that I don't understand why they need it, but I'm going to go get it. It's miserable regardless, but for us, it's 10 times more miserable. But I have a great team that understands how to navigate that misery and make it not so tough. And then when you start adding in these other really, really good products for the consumer, sorry, for the investor, not consumers, that makes it even more difficult for the banking industry, gets me excited.
Yeah, no, I love it. This is very cool. I can't wait to actually watch the movie of the trailer that you were pushing earlier today. I think that I actually feel like there's going to be a lot of hits and highlights that were not mentioned. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you, and thank you for being in Missouri, because otherwise you probably would attack Joey for that little house on the prairie comment to start off. Maybe
you're not
give
kidding.
Us a reprieve.
Yeah, I'm going to chop a line right now and have that ready for next time I see him. As far as that movie's concerned, you're looking forward to, just know it stars Pauly Shore. So you got to get ready for that.
All right. No worries. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. I appreciate you. I know you got somebody calling you from Europe here in a second. Do this loan. And if you're looking for an investment property and you're needing somebody who has experience, this is the guy to go to. Aaron, one more time, how they can get in touch with you.
Just go to aaronbchapman.com. It will have the most up-to-date information on how to get a hold of me.
All right. Thank you so much again for your time coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Looking forward to the next one.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.